KMOX at your service. Welcome to the Helitech Waterproofing Home Improvement Show, presented by Schlieder Painting and Home Improvement Company. Schlieder Painting. Here's your host, Scott Mosby, on KMOX.
All right, good Saturday, good grief. It is the center of the country. We are tailing off at the end of the year. This is KMOX and the Helitech Home Improvement Show. We have 2 hours today. You are today's topic. You are today's guest. And you're today's reason we are here and University of KMOX. My name is Scott Mosby. 2 hours, 10 phone lines, your topics, away we go. You are today. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, and 800-925-1120. That's how we get together here on the miracle of modern radio, and we are talking about all things around your home. Well, yeah, the weather, the leaves, fall, old man winter, he's already visited us a couple of times, and it's getting chillier. I know, don't snow melt, ice, rain. Rain turns into that cold stuff, you know, and then turns into ice. Slippery, don't fall. Falls are the leading cause of stays in the hospital in the wintertime. So keep in mind, both indoors and outdoors, that's all part of what it is. Scott Mosby, 2 hours. Bring on your phone calls. I'm a little bit, lonely right here in the corner. Studio, view. Wonderful. Again, we have 2 hours today to talk about any of the topics that matter to you. My name is Scott Mosby. I own and operate Mosby Building Arts. We were founded in 1947 by my dad. He knew some stuff, passed on to me. I was just smart enough to absorb whatever I could from dad. And, you know, some of that stuck here with the people that I work with at Mosby Building Arts. It's really kind of a learning platform for me and us, and frankly for you too. We extend that courtesy to you and take our KMOX responsibility very seriously here. And, since the founding of KMOX in 1925, yeah, a long time ago, we're sneaking up on 100 years here at the Mighty Mox. And 50,000 watts AM signal, now we've spread to FM signals, radio.com. If you don't know about that app, the thing goes on your smartphone, that's a way to bring that with you any time of the day. Recall things, you can get on instantly. You can hear me or any of the KMOX family of broadcasters anywhere on the globe, around the globe, and you can even pull back and go through what's called a podcast. Yeah, I know. It's an everyday occurrence for some, but it's a little new to others. You can get a podcast and go back to last week's show, 2 weeks ago. You can find it. You find out what's happened and what was discussed there. Most of that is related to what was that product, what was the concept of the question, and what can I learn from that? Because sometimes we listen as just normal everyday community listeners, and then, boom, turn the corner, tree laying down in our backyard, took out the shed, now what? Who do we call? All right, 314-436-7900 is KMOX, 436-7900, toll free anywhere on the globe, 800-925-1120, 925-1120. I say we just get going here. We've got a big day, 2 hours, lots of things happening. We're going to talk about leaves and gutters, downspout, drain, roofs, yards, drainage, everything related to home improvement and the fall. You know, the fall, like, you know, the time right now when it threatens to be really cold. It is. It's here. It's upon us. Let's fire up and see what's cooking here and talk with my friend Alice. Hey, Alice. Scott Mosby, welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
All right, two questions real quick. We bought the house, and they had hookups for a washer and dryer in the one bedroom. Mm-hmm. Now, and of course, we've never used it. I use it in the basement because I'm afraid the hose might break. Is that a good idea to use the washer and dryer in your bedroom of the hookup?
Alice, the simple word for me is absolutely. There are many, many reasons for it, mostly that the clothes usually start there, they get folded there, and they get put away there. So having a laundry washer dryer right next to the point of use and the point of care, makes perfect sense. So that's number one. Number two, having that laundry facility close to where you live keeps you from going up and down those stairs, which as years pass, or you know, you forget to turn out the light, light bulb goes out, miss a step, down you go. Now you're at the bottom of the steps, no way to get back up, and the only way to wash your clothes, you know, is to go up and down stairs. So again, we at Mosby, are one of our big things is aging in place, basically modifying a home for forever living. And we learned very quickly we would make bathrooms and kitchens accessible, and then somebody 6 months later going downstairs, we, you know, we're scrubby Dutch, we're in St. Louis, we don't want anybody doing our socks and underwear for laundry. Boom, there's an injury in the basement, and now we're bringing the laundry upstairs. So I have this conversation quite often in my regular day, you know, career life at Mosby. Do not take that out. You may choose not to put the washer dryer there, but typically it is a real asset as years go on.
Is there any way to guarantee that it won't leak? Do you put anything under the washer, any rubber mat or anything, or any protection under the washer?
Oh, absolutely. There are washer pans and dryer pans that actually can get plumbed into, so it can be kind of a catch for any water that leaks. You can pipe it in with a P-trap just like a normal shower base. That's required. So if your laundry was on the second floor, then having that shower pan plumbed in would be a requirement of the building code because there's finished space down below. The reason you don't see it on the first floor is it's a semi-condition, unoccupied. It's a basement, so it's like a crawl space, no foul, no damage, so they don't require it there. So, but, yeah, we put them in all the time.
Now, the other question is the kitchen. You have that redone. Should you put the floor in first or the cabinets in first?
Almost, if you can afford it, put the floor in first. And that gets back to the same question you have, that, you know, if the dishwasher poops out or Timmy, the three-year-old, drops a gallon of milk on the floor, if you wait and put the cabinets in and then put the floor around it, your cabinets are sitting down inside of a bowl. And so only when we're required primarily by homeowners or if it's just a simple quick bath redo, we'll do it under objection. But typically at Mosby, we almost always prefer to put the floor in first unless it's a big moving floor or something like that. Sometimes we, anyway, there's more to that on how the floor moves and cabinets do or do not. So, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, Alice, those are great questions and kind of water-based and smarter than the normal public. So, again, we have the KMOX listeners being some of the smartest in the world. That's you, Alice. You bet. High fives for Alice. Scott Mosby, Home Improvement, 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. There is a ton of wisdom in Alice's questions, both about laundry in the living quarters as well as shower pans or just drain pans that we call them. You know, how do you manage water if and when it happens? The reality is it doesn't happen much, but it does cause some real damage if the problem is. The number one cause of water damage in a residential home? Yeah, what is it? If you know the answer, raise your hand, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the number one water damage inside of a home, according to the Insurance Institute. 314-436-7900, 800-925-1120. I am Scott Mosby. This is KMOX. I promise you my best today, and I'm at your service right here on KMOX. Yes, indeed. Back together. Home improvement. Tis the fall. The leaves are upon us everywhere swirling about. We can talk about that or other things. Just keep in mind those leaves start above the house. They land on the roof. They roll into the gutter. Some of them blow off the roof. Some of them plug up the gutter. Then we get a few inches of rain here and there, and they wind up in the downspouts. The issue is if you plug up those downspouts, and that can occur very rapidly when you're shoving big leaves down them, or small debris for that matter as well, and then they just block and hold the water. If you get a deep freeze with a downspout full of water, it will split the seam and just blow it up just like it was inflated like a basketball. So make sure you clear and clean and maintain clear and clean on your gutters, your downspouts, and if you have them, if you're lucky enough to have them, the underground smooth white PVC polyvinyl chloride pipe that's down under the ground, because the more water you get in those pipes, the slicker and more those pipes are scoured, at, you know, just like scouring a pan or a shower. It's the same terminology in plumbing, that if you get enough water flow, basically it just evacuates, clears, and slick cleans that whole pipe. So keep that clear and your house will be just as happy as it can be. If you have a few leaking joints at the miters, the gutters, the end caps, the downspouts, those are, you know, they're nice to get fixed, but the big amount of water that gets handled by all of that gutter and water management system is the paramount one to keep going. So plugging up and getting the small leaks fixed is nice, but make sure you get that whole system working reliably, because in the middle part of the country here, and you know who you are, and we are all, if you're listening to my voice on that team, it matters. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. I promised the number one water leak. Okay, raise your hand. No, you down the hall to the left, wash your hands when you're done. Different question. Oh, yeah, ice maker. The ice maker in the refrigerator. Why? Because it's under pressure all the time. They're not exactly built by NASA. They tend to be, you know, they're float, you know, they're on-demand water valves. So it's, when the water level gets low, or the little sensor wand indicates that the ice tray is empty, it goes down and that depresses, just like in a toilet tank. It then calls for water when the water level dry, and it starts making ice. Well, for whatever reason, you've got a lot of times, you've got copper pipes that kink. You've got the plastic pipes that now, with reverse osmosis, that water actually is so acidic that it will eat through or damage a copper pipe, and the plastic pipe is actually the better choice if you're using reverse osmosis filtered water. But anyway, my point being that there are more water damage claims for ice makers, primarily the inside the house, than anything else, unless you have, you know, floods and all that sort of thing. 314-436-7900-800-925-1120. Let's go to my friend Anita. Hey, Anita, Scott Mosby here. Good Saturday to you. How can I help?
Well, I don't know where to start, but I'm planning on putting in a gas stove where there is no gas line. I've got gas piped to a dryer not more than about 10 feet away. Mm-hmm. But it's an electric existing stove. But I want to put this gas one in. And I was told I could use a flex tubing connecting it to the gas line in my basement and bringing it across a couple joists to my hopeful stove. Now,
yes, you can.
Code.
Yes, you can. The issue is it's not just any plastic tubing. It's an approved, tested, underwriter lab blessed type of fitting. So the plastic works pretty well. For example, if you drive around town and you see that yellow pipe, plastic coils around town, that's the gas company that now Spire. And so when you are buying gas coming to your home, natural gas, it's coming through typically a yellow colored plastic tube. The reason that's yellow is because it doesn't build up static electricity. If you blow air through normal plastic pipes, you can cause an incredible electric shock. Well, electric shocks and natural gas don't get along too well, all that.
No.
So the plastic pipes, as long as you're using, and I would say installed by a licensed plumber or the gas company, one of those two, then they'll typically put that piping in. They'll make sure the appliance is properly ground. You know, there's more than just the gas line to this. So the answer is yes, you can when you do it right, just like everything else.
Yes. Okay. Well, I didn't know where that flex tubing with meat code, and I was concerned about it. So thank you very much. I sure appreciate your program.
Anita, you've got a few handy pros in your pocket for about $35 that'll come by and check this out for you. So if you just require your contractor to have a building permit put in, then you've got this free consultant guy that will stop by your home after that piping's in, check it all out, make sure you're not going to blow up. So, you know, that's a pretty important thing. And that's why Spire does this piping stuff, because they visit our house every year or two just to make sure Mo, Larry, and Curly didn't, you know, plumb up some silly gas pipe that's going to blow us all up. So they're pretty responsible in how they serve us. But
who is that again? I'm sorry.
Our gas company, Spire. Where are you served by? LaClique Gas, which is now.
I'm with Ameren.
Oh, well, your gas comes from somebody. Where are you? Are you in Illinois? Okay,
yes.
Ameren. Okay, then just have Ameren put it in, or have a licensed plumber put it in, and you'll be good to go. And all those, you get a second set of eyes on there that you just can't beat.
Okay, I sure appreciate it very much.
Yep, it's
thank you.
And Anita, after putting in that gas line, it matters, because if you're a gas person, by golly, that heat is really dandy.
Yes.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now. Again, a lot to that question, a lot to that answer, and a few things that are really powerful, you know, gas dryers, you know, gas cooktop, you know, real, you know, frankly, that conversation, we at Mosby put in a ton of kitchens. Most of the projects we have at Mosby Building Arts, which is my day job, has some sort of a kitchen in it. And that kitchen is around the cooktop, you know. So once you get past the who all comes to your kitchen, which means everybody all the time, because we all gather around food, whether it was 1,000 years in a cave or 100 years ago in a log cabin or today in a nice house, we love to gather around food. Gas or electric? Well, gas had it just so hands down for so many years. And now for those of you that have been into it, there is now an induction cooktop. Induction. And on an induction, this is an electric cooktop. Doesn't take a whole lot of electric, so you don't need this enormous wire to wire this puppy up. When you have that thing on full high, you can put your bare hand down on the cooktop with no injury, no damage. Now, if you have a stainless steel ring on, that stainless steel ring will get 1,000 degrees instantly. I mean, I'm very hot, very fast. It's not really 1,000 degrees. My point is the induction, what happens is this induction cooktop works with ferrous metals, which means like cast iron pots, stainless steel, things like that. It will not work with aluminum, because it's not fair, it can't rust. So anyway, the induction-based cookware becomes an extension of the... Anyway, so for those of purists that love only gas, they're getting won over slowly by this induction electric cooktop. So anyway, more about that later. Let's see what's happening with my buddy Bill. Hey, Bill, Scott here. Happy Saturday. Welcome aboard, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, Scott, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have three questions that I'll try to go fast. The first one is the history of gutters. I'm assuming that gutters really started to collect rainwater for drinking and so forth. So I'm curious why we still use gutters, because I know in some places they build houses without gutters and the water just runs off. So I'm curious, you know, what's the real purpose of gutters nowadays, and how much can I modify the gutters? Like, for example, if I want to take the downspouts that are normally have all these angles and stuff in them, if I wanted to put a really big downspout, like a foot long or something, or a foot wide, so that's not a problem area anymore. And I was just curious about those kind of questions.
Well, number one, the water falling on your roof is yours to do with whatever you want. So if you want to put it into a rain barrel, if you want to collect it into a water garden under the ground, you can. It's free. It falls out of the sky. You know, you can get into the legality of, you know, the law that supports all of that, of when it falls out of the sky, who does it belong to? Well, you know, basically, not only can you use it, you now have responsibility not to abuse it. So if you build a lake or put in a dam, and that dam washes out and damages all your neighbors, that's your problem too. So likewise, anything you do on the roof is yours. And the history of gutters was for water collection out on the prairie. You know, if you build a roof and you've got this big surface water collection thing, well, you know, what if you're in the middle of nowhere? Because everybody 200 years ago was off the grid. There wasn't a grid. There wasn't water. There wasn't gas. There wasn't electric. Only in the urban areas did that happen in the industrial age. So the point being that once we started putting stuff underground, like basements and crawl spaces, and it got away from drinking water and usable water. And out in the desert today, still, you get out in the remote areas and off the grid, people are still using water gutters. And, you know, many of the listeners today out in the middle of Illinois and Missouri in rural areas, they are collecting that water, and they may use it for gardening and buy their drinking water or whatever. But keep in mind, it's still happening today. It's part of the world we live in, you know, and water out of the sky is healthier for our plants, you know, than anything else. So you can do anything you want with the water off your roof. The history is most of that water, especially when you get out in those rural areas, is pretty darn clean stuff if you're not running it through the atmosphere of the urban, you know, city areas.
Thank you. And I guess the second part of that question is there city codes based on where you live? Like if I say I'm going to take my gutters off, and I'm going to do something different to manage the water. I mean, are there codes based on where you live in the city that say, oh, you've got to have gutters? I mean, have you seen something like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When mm-hmm. we get into the high concentration or what's called high-density housing, city of St. Louis, the Inner Ring, for example, Clayton, all those places that where you typically see clay tile roofs, you know, the hard surface roofs, that is for fire reason and fire spread. Well, if you get 3 inches of rain in 2 hours in downtown St. Louis, they really want to be an active participant in deciding and prescribing or proscribing how and where that water goes. Thus, MSD today saying, all right, the city required all water, downspouts and sewers, to go in 100 years ago to the same place, goes down to MSD. MSD, you know, treats all that, clean water and black water alike. They're saying, wait a minute, we don't have enough money to treat rainwater, and the rainwater is what makes all of our neighbors mad when it backs up in our basement. Because if we only had the sewers, a rainstorm wouldn't affect the volume of water in the sewer systems. So now you've got the city saying, all right, I get it. You know, so now they're requiring downspouts no longer to connect to those underground clay tile pipes that fail. All of you in the city are shaking your heads. You all know exactly what I mean. So my point is you betcha, in high density, once you get out in the rural areas, all the building code says is, if you have a basement or crawl space or foundation, and everybody has footings, whether you're in the desert with a footing that's 12 or 18 inch, it doesn't matter. The point being that you've got to collect and manage that water. Now, that may be gutters on the ground. Have you ever seen a chain coming down from the edge of a roof, a water chain?
Yes, I have.
That's an example of a ground soil-based on-the-surface gutter. So someplace, and think about it, if you're up at 10,000 feet in the mountains, and every winter everything turns to ice on your roof, that just means that the snow is going to rip your gutters off. So houses up at high elevations, cold climates, at the very hot and the very cold, typically don't have gutters. But they do have water collection down on the soil because, for example, in the desert, when it rains, man, it really pours. And in the winter, up at elevation in the mountains, when it freezes and snows, that stuff will rip everything off the edge of your roof. So you betcha, there are all kinds of ways to do gutters.
Thank you very much, Scott. Do I have any time for one more quick question, or is that it?
Yeah, if you have a quick one, how's that, Bill? Go for it.
Okay, I want to buy a duplex or a fourplex, and I found one that is leaning. It says it's leaning. When does an occupancy permit, when would they say that this leaning or how much of that foundation is bad when they would say, we're not going to give you an occupancy permit? Because this foundation is leaning, and the second part of that is how much does it cost to mud jack or fix something like that? I know
that's one question. And underneath that question is why is it leaning? Why is the foundation and footing failing? Because it could be soil. Those of you in Illinois listening around the mining, coal mines primarily, sometimes subsidence, meaning the soil literally falls out from underneath the footing and foundation. And that's a bigger issue that we get into as well. But my point is that it's a big deal. That's why they have occupancy permits, so that you as an owner or a landlord, when somebody moves in, it's a safe structure. It's a lot of money. You need to start with a civil engineer or an ASHI home inspector to get a general report on the house. Second is you're going very quickly to a licensed structural engineer that knows that stuff and the soils.
Yeah, because I would imagine, like, you don't know if there's a huge cavity underneath there. I mean, it sounds like it could really turn into a big mess.
Yeah, and that's, you know, Helitech, the guys that do the foundation waterproofing, they're dealing with that all the time. If you call them up on the phone, they know where you live. They already know the type of soil you have, the amount of gravel, how bad it is for drainage and structure, because they deal with it every day. So that's where the experience matters on things like that. So, yeah, boy, howdy, you're going 0 to 60 very quickly when you're into anything leaning.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Scott, for your answers. I do love the show, and you guys have a good holiday.
Thanks, Bill. You too. All right, folks, Bye. We're going to take a short pause, get back on schedule here on the windy day of Scott's voice today, University of KMOX. We'll be right back for more after this. All right, home improvement. Hey, folks, tis the season. We've got a few people around the community just need a little bit of help. It's time to party up and get together, and we have a gathering happening in a couple Saturdays. Right from now, I'll be broadcasting live from my own home hut, Mosby Building Arts in Kirkwood, and it is going to be the holiday gathering season, and we are going to gather things that help people. We have so many toys. The truth is, we still call it stuff the truck, but it's not toys. This is to benefit three charities: Home Sweet Home, Lydia's House, and the Women's Safe House. And these items, typically, Home Sweet Home, we need things like pillows, nightstands, pots and pans, shower curtains, toast, you know, all that stuff to set up home. And then for Lydia's House, it's similar, and this is for battered women where a place they can get away and just have a safe place. Women's Safe House is very similar. Cookie sheets, pizza pans, laundry detergent, paper towels, latex gloves, hygiene pads only, deodorant, shampoo, all that stuff. Please go to our website at callmosby.com, see how you can help, because this is the time. This is something you can stop by. We're having it December 7th. It's at Mosby Building Arts on Leffingwell Avenue right there in Kirkwood, and it's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. I will be broadcasting live, and Santa will be there. Yeah. I think one year we're probably going to have a Moses too, you know. We go back to college. I was at a university where we had a Moses and a Santa. That was a pretty good time. Well, that's a different issue. Phone lines. Let's see what's cooking here with my buddies, and let's see. How about Norm? Hey, Norm, Scott Mosby, Home Improvement. How can I help you, my friend?
Scott, assuming you've checked out your contractor and he's reliable, what's a reasonable upfront payment, and what about progress payments? For instance, what is your company's policy?
Typically, it depends. For a very small job, there's no down payment because it's very quickly. It's more of a risk. Think of who's paying for what. If we're doing a, say, $100,000 job and it has $30,000 of cabinets in it, when we place the order for those cabinets, we are liable and obligated to pay for those cabinets. So those heavy materials will typically match the outlay or risk that a company undertakes. So a company like us, we're in the business of building things. We're not a bank, so we don't finance. I mean, we do have financing available. But if there's a big ton of materials that all have to be committed and ordered in a company like us, we buy that stuff out first. So when we start the job, we typically have all that stuff in a warehouse waiting for that project. Well, once we sign our name to buy all that stuff and we promise to pay for it, if you cancel that project, we now are holding the bag on that $30,000 or whatever it is. So when you have a heavy material outlay at the beginning of the project, and a small company that doesn't do this, they don't buy out their materials, but then they typically have a hard time to be on time. I think we're 93.7% on time completion. We have an app on our phone for all of our employees to track exactly that, and this is why. So typically it could be 25 to 30% if it's material heavy. If you're uncomfortable, you can negotiate that with the company, because this same conversation, even if you pay them a 30%, where does it go? You know, so if it's your money and you're giving it to a contractor, and that's why a reputable contractor, BBB and all that, why that counts. But if you're trying not to put money into that and you're asking your contractor to be a bank as well, well, now you're just going to raise how much they have to charge you, because now they're going to charge you what the bank charges them, because they're not a bank, they're a contractor. So keep in mind, Norm, that it really would, should, and better contractors typically will take a deposit, but they will not get ahead of you. If we ever, and we have project payments that typically go every 2 weeks, if we get ahead of a client, we'll just stop the payments or give them a call and say, wait a minute, I don't like a client to get too far ahead of me, and I don't like to get too far ahead of a client. I like a nice EV, you know, cash flow. Now, we went to a predictable cash flow, Norm, because clients couldn't figure out when to get their money from their investments to pay. So long answer, big issue, but thanks for asking. How'd I do for you there, Norm?
Pretty good. Good. Thank you very much.
You bet. And again, there are companies that say, don't pay us until we're done. Well, if that's a $6,000 or $7,000 project, no risk either side. You know, if it's mostly labor, a few materials here and there, it's not a real big deal. But there is an issue of risk, and companies that have the experience of knowing that. And you know, we have clients that, you know, have unforeseen things in the middle of the project. And for example, if one passes away mid-project, do we have to stop the project? I mean, we do for emotional reasons, both for our own employees and the family. But again, it's typically we want to finish that project so that the asset is there to be, you know, if they want to sell it or whatever they need to do. So there are a lot of reasons, for good reasons, for deposits, and there are a lot of bad reasons for deposits. But again, that's why I really advocate you are going into business with your contractor, your caregiver, your painter, your nurse, your doctor. If you don't trust them and they aren't really outstanding in their industry, you're holding the bag. You're carrying all that risk. And they say, you know, well, what's the advantage of a good price? A good price is a good price. But on a low price, the consumer is holding, carrying, and responsible for the risk. And if it's a small project, it may be a reasonable risk to take for a consumer. But when the more complex, the bigger, more difficult the projects are. For example, we do projects for $100. We do projects for $2.5 million, all on remodeling. No new homes. We just, you know, that's the scope and complexity of our team, and that's why. But anyway, enough of me for, let's see what's happening here. Let's go to my buddy, how about Larry? Hey, Larry, Scott Mosby, welcome aboard. How can I help? Hey, Larry, listen to your phone, not your radio, man. We're 7 seconds apart. I'm a little slow. I'm 7 seconds behind. Are you there, Larry?
Sorry about that.
Yes, sir. Thank you. How can I help you, my friend?
How are you doing?
Fantabulous.
Good. I have an outside faucet, and it's leaking. Slow leak. It's the original faucet on the house. And I'm wanting to replace it to see if I should. I have about a 3-foot long pipe wrench. And what I'm not sure of is that would you know if this faucet is a soldered joint or a threaded joint?
Can you see the 12 to 24 inches inside the house inside that faucet?
It's a cinder block foundation. Okay. And so all I can see is the copper pipe going in through the wall, just where it goes in.
How old is your house?
Right around 1952.
1952. Boy, I'm surprised to see
copper. I don't want to go to cranking and torquing on that thing if it's a solder joint.
Well, if you can't see the other end of it and you can't get a wrench onto it, even if it's soldered, you're going to rip it apart. And if
exactly.
It hasn't been moved for half a century and you put a big wrench on it, you're going to rip it apart. So, do you know if it's a, I'll tell you what you can do. Shut off the water to your house. And typically there's a nut, a bushing thing. And you can unscrew that from the faucet body. So you would hold the faucet body with one wrench, and you'd take that nut, usually about an inch and a quarter in diameter.
And you're talking about the one on top of the faucet?
Yes, sir. Unscrew that. Take that to the hardware store. You still have the water off to your house. And have this conversation. They'll tell you what it is. But generally, I think it's threaded. I suspect what you have inside is probably a wrought iron pipe. And until you can get to the back side of that faucet, even if you were a licensed plumber, I wouldn't go messing with that big wrench. Just make sure that faucet body, the spout, doesn't move at all. And you're just unpacking the packing nut. That will come out.
I'm not sure if the packing alone would do it. It is dripping
right
out of the spigot part.
But it will answer how it's connected inside that wall, though.
Uh-huh.
You take that to the hardware store. They can say, that's this kind of thing. Yeah, they'll put it in your hand and say, this is what's inside there.
Okay.
Good luck. I wouldn't tackle this on my own. Mo, Larry, and Curly. Have you ever seen that Three Stooges episode where water's coming out of everything?
Right.
You can get there pretty quickly with this question.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure about, and I'm just not sure if it's threaded. If it is, I might be able to get it off, but I might be causing more harm than good.
Even if it's threaded, it is basically soldered from lime buildup, and you won't be able to get them apart unless you get a wrench
years
on both.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Good
luck. Well, I will try that. Yeah, thank you for your advice, sir. I'm a first-time caller.
Okay, Larry, thanks.
Appreciate your show. Okay.
Roger. All right, thank you. Let's take a short pause. KMOX Home Improvement, Scott Mosby. We'll be back. Okay, wrapping up hour one. One more hour coming out noon to one. Stay tuned. 1 o'clock today after the Home Improvement Show is the 1 o'clock Retire Ready afternoon of experts here on KMOX. Stay tuned. More happening. Let's go right to my friend Sally. Hey, Sally. Good morning. Welcome to KMOX. How can I help?
Hi, Scott. I'm doing fine. How are you?
Fantabulous, my friend.
Good. I recently had two faucets replaced in my home, the kitchen faucet and the faucet in my bathroom. Those are the two faucets that I use the most. And the plumber said that I do have a little bit of hard water, and there were calcium deposits that were causing the pressure coming out of those faucets to be decreased. And that's the reason that I called the plumber in the first place, that I wasn't getting a good water flow out of these two faucets. Mm-hmm. So what I'm asking, excuse me, is can you talk a little bit about hard water and what to do about that?
Okay, Sally, I'm going to slide down your input so you won't be able to speak anymore because I've got 30 seconds. I will talk about hard water in the next 30 seconds and when we come back at the top of the hour. Think of calcium deposits or lime deposits in the pipes just like plaque inside of our arteries because we ate too many cheeseburgers. So normal use and life will bring these deposits on the inside of pipes. Well, sometimes it's medically arteries and sometimes it's copper and iron pipes. So anyway, when we come back, I'll talk about that more. Stay tuned. Hour 2, Home Improvement, KMOX at your service.